We're continuing in our series, The God's Story, Wilderness Wanderings. As I was thinking about this last week, I was reminded of when I was a teenager going on a couple of different short-term missions trips. This was back in the early 90s. Back then, kind of short-term missions trips were kind of a new thing. And our church started to go down to an orphanage down in Mexico. Nowadays, whenever we go on a short-term missions trip, somewhere far away like that, we hop on a plane and we fly there and we get there really quick and we do our thing and then we fly back and you're in and out quickly because of flying. But back then, flying was a lot more expensive, and so we took buses down. And we'd hop in a bus, we're in the lower mainland, and we would take 3 days to travel down to Mexico and 3 days to travel back. So we'd spend almost a week in travel and only a week there in Mexico. Have you ever been on a trip where you wish that it went a lot faster than what it did? There are moments on that bus trip where you're like, man, when are we gonna get there, right? It's that famous, Dad, when are we gonna get there? And yet, in the midst of those 3 day travel and 3 day up, it was actually some of, in many ways, the most impactful moments of what happened in our groups. Because the reality is the time on the bus, it was time in the travel that God started to shape our hearts. God started to prepare our hearts. We're spending 24/7 with each other as teammates. And so by the time we got down to Mexico, we were ready. We were ready to serve. We were ready to do. And then on the way back, it's 3 days, once again, in the bus of us sorting through our feelings, sorting through what we learned, sorting through what we experienced. And so after the fact, you realize that the time in the journey was all worth it. The time in the journey was just as important as the time in our destination. So we've been talking about the formation of the nation of Israel over the last several weeks. Their time in slavery in Egypt. Their exodus from slavery out of Egypt. And last week, Pastor Nathan talked about their time at Mount Sinai. Now, they spent an entire year at Mount Sinai where they spent time being formed, God giving them the Torah or the law, guiding and directing them. But before they got to Mount Sinai and after they left Mount Sinai, the nation of Israel actually spent a lot of time in the wilderness, a lot of time wandering. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. The interesting thing, you might know this, you may not know this, is that when they left Egypt to get to what's called the Promised Land, which would have been the land of Canaan at that time, if you take a direct trip on foot between those two places, it shouldn't have taken them more than a few weeks, at most a few months. That's how short of a journey it is on foot. Not a long time. But if you read through the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, you realize that it actually took 40 years. Think about that. A trip that should have taken a few weeks or a few months took 40 years. And that wasn't by accident. God was taking them to the Promised Land. But in them going to the Promised Land meant they needed to be prepared to be in the Promised Land. Their hearts needed to be prepared. This was about them trusting God for provision, trusting God for food, trusting God for water, even trusting God for clothes, the everyday stuff. They needed to trust him. God allowed them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years because he wanted them to learn to trust him. It wasn't just about trust. It was also about formation. It was understanding and living out what it meant to be sons and daughters of God. It was breaking their slavery mentality. They'd been slavery for so long. That was who they were. It was so ingrained inside of them. It was their identity. It was how they lived. It was so ingrained that it took 40 years for God to break that off so they could truly be and live out sons and daughters of God. Do you know that, like, when we come into faith, it takes a long time. You may be saved in one moment where you give your life to Jesus. But sometimes it takes a really long time for us to learn, for us to grab the identity to live out what it means to be sons and daughters of God. And God is not in a hurry. He is so patient with us. We are slow to learn, and God's like, I'm okay. I'm going to wait for as long as it takes. You know, sometimes in church, I hear of people struggling to come into the church because they feel like failures. They saw how the last week went. They saw how the last month went, and they're like, man, I'm failing at this. And so they don't come into church. And the reality is God's like, I see you. I know you feel like you're failing. But every single time you fall down, I want to be there to pick you up. Because even it takes 40, 50, 60 years, I am with you for you to be shaped into the person that you've been called to be. You know that God took the nation of Israel out of Egypt. But the second step was that he had to take Egypt out of them. Let me say that again. In a moment, God took the nation of Israel out of Egypt, but it took 40 years or more in reality to take Egypt out of them. Going through the wilderness was a painful gift, revealing their unhealthy attachments to things that were connected to slavery. It was a painful gift. Have you ever been through something in life that is like that? You're going through something and it is not fun and it is painful. And sometimes you can't figure out why you're experiencing it. It's not until afterwards you realize what God was doing. You realize the gift of what he was doing because he's like, I need to do something in you and it's not going to happen until I take you through this and it's going to be painful. The wilderness was not a place of punishment. It's really, really easy to read through Exodus and the Torah and to read it and feel like God is punishing them, but he wasn't punishing them. He's helping them to get to new places of thinking, new ways of thinking and living and having the heart of God inscribed on their hearts. Yes, God gave them 10 commandments that was inscribed on stone by the finger of God. But in reality, he wanted something more. He wanted something inscribed on their hearts. Letting go of the slavery mentality and truly trusting God. The picture of the wilderness that they wandered around for 40 years actually is a great metaphor for the Christian life. It's a metaphor of Christian discipleship. Wilderness seasons are painful, but they reveal our attachments, our false, distorted identities that are within each one of us. Wilderness ultimately is not punishment for us, but a place where holy patterns of God are scribed on our hearts, preparing us for his glorious inheritance originally that we were designed for, to be with Jesus. We talk about how God is a holy God. He is without sin. He's amazing. And this journey that we're going through, God is slowly shaping us because our ultimate destination is eternity with Jesus, that holy God. And he is prepping us for that. It's exciting. It's painful. It's not fun. But we look to it with hope. It's not without purpose. Sometimes the things that we experience, sometimes even in our Christian journey, we wonder and we ask, is there purpose in this? But there is. There is. Even though God saved the Israelites from slavery, they weren't transformed yet. And that's what God wanted to do, and that's why he took them through those 40 years. When we choose Jesus, he doesn't save us from slavery out of Egypt, but he does save us from slavery to sin. In an instant, in a moment, when you trust in Jesus, when you believe in him, you've gone from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. His righteousness has been given to you. He comes and he lives in you. You become a child of God. It's incredible. It's amazing. You should be excited about that. But this is the thing. If you're expecting for the journey now to go from there to like, man, it's just all uphill. You're like, you're cruising. I mean, it's going to be amazing. I hate to break it to you. It's just not like that. I want you to think of the nation of Israel coming out of, see how exciting that was when they came out of slavery. God saves them. They leave and they're up against a wall where the nation of Egypt is coming at them. Their army is coming at them. God's like, man, I'm going to part that Red Sea. The Red Sea parts and they walk through on dry land. The Red Sea comes back together, destroying the army of Egypt, and they're saved. And the book of Exodus talks about how they celebrated and they wrote songs of worship. And you can imagine how exciting that was. And that excitement lasted a moment. It lasted a moment. It was so fast before things changed. This wilderness wanderings that the people of Israel were in that represents all the hard stuff of life. It's easy to complain. It's easy to be angry with God and maybe give up on faith. Of my years of following Jesus, I've seen so many people get bitter and angry and lose heart and give up on their faith in God. And they end up returning to their old life. That's what Israel wanted to do. Very, very quickly, they forgot about what God had done and they wanted to return back to Egypt. Let's read about that this morning. 1 month after God's rescue, this is what happens. They say, if only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt. Wow, that's intense, right? Have you ever felt intense feelings like that? I know I have. And they're intense. If we'd just been killed back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted. But now you have brought us into this wilderness to starve us all to death. I'm just going to pause there. We have to think about this. I don't know about you, but I've been in situations where the grass is always greener on the other side. Have you ever been that? Where you want to get to a destination, you get there, and it's not all that it's cracked up to be, and then you think back to the way things were, and you're like, oh, that was bad. That's better. I want to go back there. And it wasn't better. It's just in your head. Look at what they're saying. Remember, these are slaves. Oh, remember how good it was back there. We just had overflowing pots of meat and all the bread that we wanted to eat. They're delusional, you guys. Sometimes when we're in the wilderness, sometimes when we're in pain, we are delusional. They're like, oh man, we had so much meat. Are you kidding me? You're a slave. We had all the bread that we wanted to eat. Really? They're making it sound like they got to go to the buffet every day. You know, the smorg down the street. It wasn't that good. It wasn't that good. I mean, they're so dishonest with themselves. They're lying to themselves. We lie to ourselves. We lie to ourselves. Sometimes we need to have someone near us that can like slap us into reality. And it continues, it says, the Lord said to Moses, look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven for you. Each day the people can go out and pick up as much food as they need for that day. I will test them in this to see whether or not they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they will gather food, and when they prepare it, there will be twice as much as usual. In the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaints, which are against him, not against us. That's Moses saying that. He's saying, listen, guys. Listen. Your complaints aren't against me. Ultimately, it's against God. You're complaining against God. It's like, can you remember where you've come from, how he's rescued you out of slavery, and you've seen miracle after miracle after miracle. And when you left Egypt, the Egyptians poured out gold and silver and riches upon you as you left. You didn't leave without nothing. You left with your arms full. And now you're complaining against God. And this is the cool thing about God. You know what? You can complain. He has big, wide shoulders. Who is the God of the Bible? Who is the God that you know? Is he a God that's going to whack you every single time you complain? Or can he take it? God can take your complaints. He's a big God. And in the midst of that, he's not a petty God either. He's not like, oh, really? You're going to whine and complain against me? Well, I ain't giving you nothing. That's not who he is. He's like, I see you. I see you. He's like, you're totally wrong, but I'm going to bless you. I'm going to provide for you. There's going to be meat. There's going to be bread. There's going to be all sorts of stuff. But this is the thing. I'm not blessing you just for the sake of blessing you. I also want to do something in this. I'm going to test you. And this test, if you've gone through tests, if you're a university student, high school student, you know, oftentimes when you take tests, it's like pass or fail, right? A test is pass or fail. Did you pass or did you fail? This is a different type of test. This isn't just a pass or fail. This is a test that you go through to shape you. We go through testing to shape us in the same way gold goes through the fire. It's being tested to burn out all the impurities. God wants to test you, not to see if you're going to pass or fail, but he's testing you because he wants to shape you. He's like, I'm going to pour out all this blessing on them, but I have a test for you. This is what it says in verse 11 of Exodus 16. The Lord said to Moses, I've heard the Israelites' complaints. Now tell them, in the evening you will have meat to eat. In the morning you will have bread, all the bread that you want. Then you'll know that I am the Lord your God. That evening, vast numbers of quail flew in and covered the camp. And the next morning, the area around the camp was wet with dew. When the dew evaporated, a flaky substance as fine as frost blanketed the ground. Here's a couple miracles. If they haven't seen miracles yet, they're going to see another miracle. How many times has God said to them, then you will know that I'm the Lord your God? They're like, we want meat. God just sends like a whole flock of quail to fly in. Here you go. I mean, they got to put some work into it. They got to, you know, kill the quail, pluck the feathers. If you're queasy, you know, there's some work to be done for them to have some meat. And there's this flaky substance that ends up on the ground. And they're like, what is this? God says, it's called manna. Do you know that manna literally means what is this in Hebrew? something they've never seen before. And God's like, if you put some work in, you will be able to turn that into bread. And so every day they're able to make bread out of the, what is this, that shows up on the ground. Then you will know that I'm the Lord your God. I don't know about you, but when I'm in a tough position, I tend to whine and complain to God. And I forget about the past times where he's provided for me, where he's taken care of me. And God's like, can you remember the last time you're in this situation? Do you remember how I provided for you? And I'm like, yeah, but this is different, right? God's like, it's not that different. I'm going to provide for you again. And God continues to do it. And then he says, then you'll know that I'm the Lord your God. God just keeps on doing it over and over and over again. Verse 15 says, Moses told them, it is the food the Lord has given you to eat. These are the Lord's instructions. Each household should gather as much as it needs. Pick up 2 quarts for each person in your tent. So the people of Israel did as they were told. Some gathered a lot, some only a little, but when they measured it out, everyone had just enough. Those who gathered a lot had nothing left over, and those who gathered only a little had enough. Each family had just what they needed, just what it needed. It's so interesting, you know, like every family had just what they needed. And they could point their fingers and say, well, what about that family over there? They like took way too much of that flaky, what is it, on the ground. They have too much, and I only got this much. But everybody had just as they needed. You know what? In life, it is really easy to compare. It's really easy to look across the room and be like, yeah, they should be happy because look how much they have. Look at the big house they live in. Look at the car they have. Look at the amount of money they have. Da, da, da. Of course, they should be thankful to God, but what about me? But this is the thing. It's like no matter where you're at in life, no matter how much or how little you have, you are going to have just what you need. Just what you need. You don't need to become a hoarder. You ever watch those TV show Hoarders? In God's economy, we can become hoarders because we don't trust him. We always think there's not enough. So no matter how much money you make, you're like, well, I better save it all for me because what if I don't have enough? And maybe when you're coming into church and you're constantly like, man, you're always talking about giving something, giving the Quebec missions trip, giving to like people, you know, adopt a family. Giving and tithes and giving, 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 giving. This is the thing. If you have the mentality that there's never enough, it's always going to feel like you never have enough. But if you can realize that, like, God is going to take care of you, you can be generous. Because he will give you what you need. He will give you what you need. You know, it's interesting when Jesus taught the disciples how to pray. He said, Jesus, teach us how to pray. And he said this, give us this day our daily bread. Have you ever thought about that? Jesus didn't say, Lord, this is how you should pray, disciples. Give us this month our daily bread, our monthly bread. Lord, give me my yearly bread. Jesus taught them, give me today my daily bread. This idea is, give me today what I need. And Jesus told them to pray like that. Don't worry. Go to God. Tell him exactly what you need. Let's continue to the last part of the story. It says this. Then Moses told them, do not keep any of it until morning. But some of them didn't listen and kept some of it until morning. But by then it was full of maggots and had a terrible smell. Moses was very angry with them. After this, the people gathered the food morning by morning, each family according to its need. And as the sun became hot, the flakes they had not picked up, melted and disappeared. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much as usual, four quarts for each person instead of two. Then all the leaders of the community came and asked Moses for an explanation. He told them, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow will be a day of complete rest, a holy Sabbath set apart for the Lord. So bake or boil as much as you want today and set aside what is left for tomorrow." So they put aside until morning, just as Moses had commanded. In the morning, the leftover food was wholesome and good, without maggots or odor. Moses said, "Eat this food today, for today is a Sabbath day dedicated to the Lord. There will be no food on the ground today. You may gather the food for 6 days, but the seventh day is the Sabbath. There will be no food on that ground that day." Some of the people went out anyway and on the Sabbath day, but they found no food. The Lord asked, "How long will these people refuse to obey my commands and instructions? They must realize that the Sabbath is the Lord's gift to you. This is what he gives you, a 2-day supply on the sixth day, so there will be enough for 2 days." It's easy to like look at this and laugh at this and think, what a bunch of morons. But I think most of us actually relate to this. You know, the people of Israel were, they were so used to relying on their own strength. They were slaves for so long. And they recognized that if I don't go out and work, I'm not going to eat. If I don't make it happen for myself, it's not going to happen. And old habits die hard. They were used to having to work for 7 days a week. And God's like, "You guys aren't getting it. This isn't a rule that I'm trying to create to like make your life harder. I want you to know that you can actually stop and rest, and I'm going to take care of you. I want you to know that you can trust me. I will take care of you. If you just trust in yourself, you have to make it happen, and you're going to have to go out there 7 days a week to make sure that you have enough for yourself." But to sit back and actually rest seems lazy, but it's not lazy. It's saying, "I'm going to choose to trust in Jesus. I'm going to choose to trust in God that he's going to provide for all of my needs." You know, as a modern-day evangelical church, it's really, really easy to set aside this instruction of Sabbath and treat it like, you know, that was good for back then, but we live in the new covenant. We live in the time of where we're not beholden to the law or whatever. But you know what? I think that God would truly still say to us today, "Actually, I give this as a gift for you." Not as a wooden rule to like feel like you have to keep a set of rules. But there's a principle about Sabbath that's so important for us to grab a hold of. Some of you are striving and you feel like you have to strive every single day. And if you were to take a day off, you go, "What will happen?" And you see all the things that need to get done. You see the work that needs to get done around your house. You see the bills that need to be paid. And you feel like you have to do it. And you know what God wants to say to you? You can keep going down that road. But I don't want you to. I want to give you life. I want to give you rest. Can you rest for a day and trust me that I'll provide for you? Last week, Pastor Nathan talked a little bit about the law. When God took the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, he took them to Mount Sinai. This is the very place where God originally revealed himself to Moses before Moses went to Egypt as a leader to bring them out of slavery. So God reveals himself to Moses in a burning bush at Mount Sinai. That's where God reveals. And so Moses brings them back to that very place. And it's there that God gives them the Ten Commandments. It's there that God gives them the law or the Torah. Oftentimes we, you know, in our English Bibles, we interpret that Hebrew word Torah as law. And when we think of law, we think of a very strict law. You know, like if you go over 60 kilometers an hour, you're going to get a ticket kind of thing. But the idea behind the Torah actually isn't law. The idea behind it is instruction. It's instruction. It's not a set of rules to restrict the people of Israel, but it's revealing that to them the heart and the character of God. In this new covenant, the Hebrew people are going to take on the name of God upon themselves. And as taking upon the name of God, they're going to represent God to the nations. And as he gives them these instructions, it's going to instruct them how to live in a way that's different from the nations around them. And as we know, it was much more than 10 commandments. There was all sorts of laws. And for us in the 21st century, when you read those laws in the Old Testament, many of them cannot be directly applied to our lives. And the reason why that is, part of the reason why that is we don't live 3,000 years ago. We don't live within their context. We are not in the same way the nation of Israel. But when we look closely at the historical context of why God was giving them those laws, we understand that they are actually wisdom literature, not just for them 3,000 years ago, but for us today as well. The principles can be applied to our lives, not in a wooden, strict, rule-based way, but we understand the heart of God that we can still apply those things to our lives. And that's what Jesus did. You know, when it came to the Sabbath, he got in trouble all the time by the religious Pharisees and leaders and rulers because he didn't follow the Sabbath exactly the way they thought he should. He didn't follow the rules. And he was constantly trying to teach them, man, you guys are missing the point. You're seeing the rule, but you're missing the principle behind it. You know, him and his disciples are wandering out in the fields on a Sabbath and they're picking pieces of grain and they're rubbing it in their hands and they're throwing the kernels of grain into their mouth and they're eating. And the religious leaders are all upset. Oh my goodness, they're harvesting on the Sabbath, which means they're working and they're breaking rules. And Jesus is like, man, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. This isn't about breaking the rules. The Sabbath was created for you. God is like, this is for you. I want you to have rest. I want you to have life. I want to bless you, not to create a set of rules that is so restrictive. It's just pointless. Jesus lived it out perfectly how we should approach the Torah, the law, the instruction of God. The idea of Exodus and wilderness is seen as a template moving forward for God's people. It's interesting, the story of the Exodus ends up being talked about by some of the prophets hundreds of years later, by guys like Isaiah, as they looked ahead in the future prophetically, looking at the nation of Israel, looking at the people of God and saying, you're going to go through a wilderness experience again. There's going to be an Exodus experience again. And as they looked forward, as Isaiah looked forward, it was fulfilled in Jesus. Do you know that? When Jesus' followers, they put together the biographies of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Sometimes we read the stories of Jesus and they're like, oh, that's a cute story. But in their mind, in Matthew's mind, Mark's mind, as they're writing this down, they understand that the things that Jesus are doing are fulfilling some of those prophecies. When the people of Israel came through out of slavery and they bumped up against the Reed Sea, and God parted it. They walked through the water. Jesus went out into the wilderness, and he approached John the Baptist. And in the wilderness, Jesus was baptized in water. And as the Israelites went out into the wilderness and wandered for 40 days, or not 40 days, but 40 years, Jesus left his baptism experience, his parting of the Red Sea, and he goes out into the wilderness as well. And he fasts for 40 days and 40 nights. Not 40 years, but 40 days. Jesus experienced a wilderness experience. But the difference between Jesus and the people of Israel is that their 40-year experience out in the wilderness, they failed time and time and time again. Jesus, the perfect human being, the person representing humanity, goes out in the wilderness and he experiences the exact same temptations that the people of Israel experienced, and yet he did not sin. He passed the test time and time and time again. And he conquers the wilderness for us. As we walk through life, every single one of us walks through a wilderness. We come out of slavery, not to Egypt, but to sin. And we hope that we can come out of that after Jesus saves us, and it's one big vacation. But coming to faith in Jesus doesn't make life easier, but it does give us purpose. You can go through the wilderness, and if you don't have faith in Jesus, maybe you look at life and it seems so pointless that you just look at life and you're just like, man, life is just painful. What's the point of this? But when you walk through the wilderness with Jesus, it's still painful. But if you can see through the eyes of Christ, you can see its purpose in your life. And you see what God is wanting to do in your life, and you see the end result. You know that the darkness is going to end and that the light is going to come. You know that one day you are going to stand face to face with Jesus, where every tear will be wiped from your eyes. Every pain will pale in comparison to the joy set before you to be with him. Sometimes people walk away from faith because as they walk through the wilderness, Egypt looks better. Egypt looks better. And they say, I'm done. I'm going back. I didn't think it was going to be this hard. I'm going back. Sometimes people lose faith because life is just hard and they give up. Others may not give up on faith and they still have faith in Jesus, but as they go through the wilderness of life, they get more bitter and cynical. One of the disappointing things that I've seen in my life, when I look out sometimes at the church and at Christians, is the fact that as we walk out this journey with Jesus, even though it's through the wilderness, we should be becoming more joyful and more loving and more hopeful people. But sometimes Christians, they can be following Jesus for 10, 20, 30 years, and they're crusty. And they're bitter, and they're cynical. And you can get to the end of your life, and sure, it's like you're saved. But man, you haven't allowed the God of the universe to shape your heart in the midst of it. This life of being a Christian isn't about just getting to the end. It's not just about getting to heaven. You know, some people are like, just get saved so you can get to heaven. That's not it. That's not it. The point is for us to walk out this life so that we can become more loving and more like Jesus. So the older that I get, when I look towards the future and I think about the goals for my life as a pastor, it's not to like preach more sermons, get better at doing this, to grow a bigger church, to become successful, whatever that looks like. But I hope when I get to the end that I'm more like Jesus. And if I can reach that, then I've succeeded. Can I invite the band up? We're going to have communion today. These three different stations of communion that have the juice and the cracker, they represent to us, in many ways, the wilderness journey that Jesus took to the cross. If I could ask those who are going to serve communion to come up. The journey to the cross was painful for Jesus. And yet, for the joy that was set before him, he did it. He knew what he was going through and he knew that it was worth it. Hebrews 12, verse 2 in the New Testament says this: fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. As we come and take communion today, would you set your eyes on Jesus? Not just about saving you, but the fact that he wants to perfect your faith. Think about that. What is it going to take for Jesus to perfect your faith? For the joy set before him. Jesus was willing to go through the cross, the sacrifice, the nailing of his hands and feet, the whipping, the scourging, all of it, because the joy set before him, and that joy was you. It was all worth it because of you. And the joy of having a relationship with you, the joy that one day you are going to be with him, standing face to face. And as he welcomes you in to his forever kingdom.